What is good, ladies and gentlemen? It's your boy Cheats here, and you are listening to the latest edition of the Black Baseball Mixtape. I'm so excited for you to dive into this episode. You are going to hear from the upper level hitting coordinator for the Baltimore Orioles, Coach Sherman Johnson. Everybody calls him Coach Sherm or Sherm. He has got a fascinating story. He's played baseball at every level imaginable. Big time college baseball at Florida State. Obviously, he's played professional baseball for a long time. He's fairly new into the coaching situation, and he's going to get into his journey and tell you all about that and what it's like to be one of these roaming instructors for an organization that gets to work with everyone from the major leaguers to all the minor league players to even the players in the academies when we're talking about players in the Dominican Republic and other places. Coach Sherm is a fascinating individual, so I'm excited for you to hear this episode. Before we get into that, we've got to thank our partners, the Players Alliance, Stilo Sports, Herencia 21. Please make sure that you follow and check out all of these organizations because they are 100% in line with what we're doing here at the Black Baseball Mixtape. I also just want to give a quick note to thank you, the listener, to this podcast. The support has been tremendous. We're gaining momentum every day. Download numbers, new listeners, all of that stuff is moving in the right direction, especially as we enter this 2024 baseball season. I do want to let you know, I want to pull you behind the curtain and let you know, when it comes to an audio podcast, it's not easy in 2024 to run this operation and to get new listeners to the audio podcast. You can post on social media, whether that's Instagram or Facebook, and to actually have those followers, if you will, convert over to listening to the audio podcast is actually pretty difficult. So what I will ask of you as a favor to the podcast, you are listening to the audio version, tell a friend or two or five who listen to audio podcasts, especially if they love baseball, if they love Black culture, if they love Black culture in baseball, make sure that they're following the audio podcast of the Black Baseball Mixtape. We need the support as best we can to keep the momentum going. We've got a huge, huge year in 2024, and I know we want to deliver it as best we can. I'm excited about this episode. Coach Sherm is a great example of what we do here on the Black Baseball Mixtape. So, without no further ado, Coach Sherm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Black Baseball Mixtape. I am your host, Cheats. I am joined by the upper-level hitting coordinator for the Baltimore Orioles, Sherman Johnson. What do they ever call you? They call you Coach Sherm, Coach? What do they call you?
They just call me Sherm. These guys, they try to keep me young, man. I mean, I'm 33, but a lot of the guys in our org are really young, so they keep me young.
So, Coach, you are in such a unique position. You get to work throughout the Orioles organization just about at every level, and it really is fascinating to see you working with the guys, you know, giving them instruction on their hitting, they're playing hitting games in the batting cage, keeping everything light. This is a loaded question, but how did we get here at 33 years old, being able to work with one of the top organizations in baseball, obviously 100 wins last year, and you're working with them all? We're going to go back a little bit from like your playing days growing up, but as a coach, how did we get here, Coach Sherm?
Wow. Just playing, honestly. I played for a long time, played at every level. Got to meet a lot of different people, a lot of unique people that enjoy talking the game, coaches that, you know, coached me and helped me along the way, and just made those relationships. And again, just got to meet a lot of different people and ended up, you know, in a position to where I knew, you know, baseball was going to be done playing wise for me eventually. And at that point, I was like, I don't really even know how I'm going to, you know, go about getting into this. And God works in mysterious ways before I could even really think about it. I didn't even have time to tell people that I was done playing, really. The Baltimore Orioles gave me a call. So that's how that all started up.
So they called you. What I'm hearing here is, hey, look, career is winding down. they called you and said, what was that call like? What's your thought? Because you're still probably in a player mindset a little bit, right?
I wasn't in the player mindset anymore. Okay. I had just finished up my one and only stint in rookie balls only. I mean, rookie ball, indie ball. It was only for a year. I knew halfway through that season, I was like, this is it. Like, my body hurts. Like, I haven't gone back to it. Yeah, I was 32 at the time. I was like, my body hurts. I didn't get picked up back to affiliate. And I feel like I still have some things to give back to the game. I love being around it. I love helping young people. And I love people just in general. So I felt that way. Told some people close to me, family-wise, and hadn't really told anybody outside of the game. We were in the playoffs in that indie ball season. We lost the next day. I was in the airport about to head back to Tampa, and I got a text from Matt Blood, who at the time was the farm director, the director of player development for the O's. And when he texted me originally, I was like, man, like, are they really, you know, are they wanting me to play? Like, I'm not playing. I don't want to play anymore. Right, like,
this is not the move.
So he's like, yeah, I just want to talk and see where you're at. I was like, cool. So he called, and then we got to talk right before my flight. And he was like, hey, like, would you be interested in coaching? And I was like, wow. Like, I was literally worried about how I was going to get into this. And here you are asking, like, if I'm interested in coaching. And I actually was supposed to go meet everybody. Instructs was still going on. I was supposed to go meet everybody down in Sarasota from Tampa, which that's just a short drive. A hurricane ended up coming, so they had to leave Instructs early. So at that point, I was like, oh, I don't. I mean, that was the opportunity. I guess it's gone. Blood told me we'll stay in touch, but I'm like, I don't really know. And then the next week, he was like, hey, we're in Baltimore. You want to fly up and you can meet everybody? And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. So flew up there, met everybody. I didn't know it, but that was like the first part of an interview.
That was like the job interview.
Yeah, I mean, I met Mike Elias. He remembered watching me play in college.
That's crazy.
He knew exactly who I was. Sig was there, holding court, talking to everybody.
Yeah.
Brendan Forney was there. Literally everybody in the front office was there that I can remember. And I was, man, this is really cool.
And you were kind of like, I'm not exactly sure what's happening. I'm going to go meet some folks.
I knew I was going to meet some folks.
This was going down.
Yeah, it was. It was. And it was very relaxed. But for me, I was like, man, these are some really smart people. And I didn't know them yet, but I could tell that they were really smart. And I was like, man, this is kind of cool. I was always pretty forward thinking when it came to analytics and how to make players better and how to make myself better. I wish I had more information when I was playing. So it just lined up. The next week, I was in the MLB Diversity Pipeline program out there.
Shout out to my man Tyrone Brooks.
Yeah, man, I owe him a lot. Him, hey. Bo Porter, Bobby Scales.
Yeah.
Those guys really helped me out. So I was in that the next week, out there in the Fall League. Heston Kerstad was actually out in the Fall League that year, along with Cesar Prieto. Got to watch them play. I wasn't assigned to the team they were on, but I got to watch them play. And then Matt Blood and Anthony Villa, who was the hitting coordinator at the time, they both came out. Got to meet up with them again.
Yeah. This is like phase two of the
interview. Yeah, got to meet up with them again, took me out to dinner. Ended up at the end of that week, ended up offering me a coaching position. That's how I got started.
Coming from a background as a player, like you said, playing at every level, playing big time college baseball as well, what's the hardest thing about coaching?
Oof. It's fun. I won't say it's hard. I would say the most challenging part is you just have a bunch of different people, different emotions, different perspectives, different thoughts, and different backgrounds. Most important, they just come from everywhere. And you get to try to relate to all of them, and you get to try to help all of them.
What would you say is your close? Because I see you already. You keep the game light. You're joking around with the fellas. What's your kind of philosophy when you're giving instruction?
I think everybody is a candidate for encouragement. This game, there's failure baked in more than any other game. It's really hard. And being so fresh out of baseball, it's pretty easy for me to remember. This is a hard game to play. And there's real emotions involved. There's real things that go on. And you're trying to do it at the highest level. So just remembering that, try to keep it light. Remember their kids. They're still growing up. They're a lot of them. I mean, Jackson's 20. Kobe's 22. They're still growing up.
You remember those days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But when I was 20, I was in college, not in AAA.
It might be, look, Tallahassee's a different place. They might be better off. No, I'm joking. Yeah. Take me back just shortly. We'll go quickly through this little part. But I want people to know because, again, black man, Tampa's the hometown, you said, right? How did you fall in love with baseball, bro?
Wow. It actually started, I was in first grade, and it came from a basketball background family. My dad played basketball. So baseball was never introduced to me. Played at school one day in elementary school, just in recess. And I came home, and I was like, I want to play baseball. And my mom and dad, as they told me the story, they were like, you don't want to play baseball. We've never introduced you to that. Like, nobody you know plays. So I want to play baseball. And they were like, okay. And they kind of threw it to the side. I asked them every day for a month to play baseball. And then they signed me up. I was bad.
What age is this?
6 years old.
Okay, so everybody's bad.
Yeah, but I was especially bad. And not only that, I can't remember anybody that really looked like me.
Okay.
Which at that time didn't bother me at all. I was just like, oh, I'm just playing baseball. Some of my friends that I'm going to meet. So that was cool. The next year I got better. I just always wanted to play and always wanted to go to the cage and always wanted to hit on the field and take ground balls. And I got better quickly. By the time I was 8, I was already in like AAU baseball, which back then travel ball AAU was like you had to try out for the team.
You had to make it.
There was no
just pay to play.
Exactly. Like your dad wasn't starting a team. Right. Like if you didn't make the team, you didn't make the team.
Right.
So did that, made the team. I was actually on the team with Michael Givens. He's from Tampa, Florida.
Nice.
And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of playing baseball literally every weekend.
So when did you realize, like, yo, I'm good at this? Not just, like, I'm better than my little league. When did you realize, like, yo, I might be able to make something out of this as a career?
I would probably say junior year in high school. I vividly remember my dad. I wanted to go to Florida State for as long as I could remember, but I vividly remember my dad taking me to the ACC tournament my junior year, and it was in Jacksonville, Florida. We drove up there, watched Clemson play, watched Florida State play, obviously, UNC, and we didn't talk the whole time we were watching the game. And we didn't talk until the road trip back home, and he was like, what'd you notice? And I was like, they all hit the ball really hard, and he was like, yeah. And I was like, they're all pretty big. He goes, yeah, they are. And I was like, well, if I want to play at Florida State, I'm only a year away from that. So right after that, my mindset just changed. Like, I was like, I got to get in the gym. I got to eat a lot more. My freshman year in college, I was 155.
Are you
so
serious?
If that tells you, like,
yeah.
I had to do work just to get to 155.
What are you about? 5'10"?
5'10".
5'10", so 155. 155 going your senior year high school.
Yep. Jeez. And I ended up walking on at Florida State. Mike Martin Jr., Jamie Shoup gave me an opportunity to try out.
Let's be clear, because you can't just casually say, I walked on.
Florida State had some dogs. Like, because you were on some really good teams. Who were some of the people you played with when you were?
Yeah. So Devin Travis is my best friend. He played in the big leagues with the Toronto Blue Jays. Sean Gilmartin has pitched in 2 different World Series in the big leagues. Luke Weaver was on some of those teams. Tyler Holt, Stephen Cardullo.
I got so many questions. Because if you're good enough to walk on at this powerhouse program in the ACC, that means some people maybe not ACC level, but you were, I'm sure people wanted you to play in their programs. So there's got to be some mental shift, like Florida State or Bud. What was happening during this recruiting time?
There was no recruiting.
Are you serious?
Yeah. University of Tampa said I was not good enough to play there. USF said I was too small to play there. Even Chipola. Chipola said I was too small to play there. And I actually went up to Chipola for like a showcase for a couple of days and played like really well. And they said I wasn't good enough to play there. So it was good. That was a chip that was needed for when I did walk on. And then there was no time to relax when I did walk on, because I remembered some of the things that these colleges that were not at Florida State's level said. So I kept that chip all the way through college playing.
That's great. Again, and with some really good teams played. And you, and it's, there's so much into that story, Coach, about just obviously making a decision of what you wanted to do, persevering to the point where you're getting on the field. We're going to talk about the pro ball transition in a second, but – I love when we're talking on the mixtape, I love talking about big threes. And so whether it's big threes and, you know, you hear them in entertainment and hip hop, the big three, you hear big three in basketball. Go back to growing up, you watching, you know, people play that you wanted to emulate, wanted to be like, or who were your guys? Who was your baseball big three when you were growing up?
Derek Jeter was number one. I got to see him every spring, the Yankees spring training in Tampa, so I got to see him quite a bit. Ken Griffey Jr. was number two. Ooh. Wore his cleats. Every time his cleats came out, I had them. I had them in different colors. Like, I'm saving up money to get his cleats. And then three was kind of like a hybrid.
Okay.
There was times it was Barry Bonds.
Okay.
And then there was times where I'm like, dang, I like the way that guy swings, or I like the way that guy swings, or I like the way he plays defense. Like, so it was like, I'm today, I'm on a Barry Larkin kick. I want to go watch him take ground balls. Or if I want to go back, I'd go like Ozzie Smith. Like, if you want to talk about like taking ground balls, Ozzie Smith. And then I'd go watch, you know, some guys like Eric Davis and how they pimp home runs. And I'm like, so I got to kind of like watch all these guys and
don't gas Eric Davis up. Hey, man. Look, don't gas Coach up, because, you know, Eric Davis, he'll be in your DMs in a minute. Talk all kinds. Look.
He's instructing for the Reds now.
Yeah, I was only with the Reds for a year in AAA.
Don't let him go.
Hey, man, I'll tell you the truth.
He's a great dude. Yeah, he's a great
those
dude.
Home runs where he would spin around, yeah, man.
He's
like,
a great dude.
Yeah. So I got to do a little bit, take a little bit of all these.
Who would
guys.
You say, I like this, because there's always the talk about, obviously, Griffey's the icon, batting practice with the hat on backwards. Jeter had a whole wave of swag. Like, there was a whole lot of Jeters. Who would you say was a more, like, baseball cultural influence, Jeter or Griffey?
For me, that's going to have to be a tie. Like, the swag of Griffey and how he played and how effortless it looked, and Jeter, like, just how professional that was and how buttoned up it was. And you didn't know, because you didn't understand as a kid how much pressure is in New York and how much it takes to have to play shortstop there and be the captain there. And you just would have never known if you just watched him play. Never showed on his face. And I got to take that away from him.
Very, very nice. All right, so let's quickly, before we get you out of here, I know you got a lot of work to do. I want a couple questions, because you mentioned your experience a little bit growing up, and really not playing with a lot of black and brown kids growing up. We look at the game today. Obviously, we see where the reality of the numbers are, but we also see a new wave of players. You get to work with a lot of them in the Orioles organization. One that stands out now is Enrique Bradfield Jr., that we know is, you know, in the pipeline as another player. You get to see on the big level Cedric Mullins here on this team in Norfolk. There's Earl Robinson and Daniel Johnson. How do we get more of our community just interested in baseball, wanting to participate, wanting to be like you were in the first grade, being like, Mom and Dad, yo, I want to play baseball?
Yeah, I mean, there just has to be more education about it. There has to be more talks about it, especially in the inner cities where it's, you could turn on the TV and it's so easy to just go grab one basketball, and how many guys can play with one basketball, one football, and we can just go out in an empty lot. How many times, or how many people can play in that? With baseball, it's different. Like, yeah, you can grab one bat, one ball, but it's like everybody needs a glove. Yep. You know, if the bat breaks, you're going to need another bat. Yep. So it's like there is a cost factor to it. But there just needs to be that education. Like, hey, man, like, you can make a lot of money playing this game too. You can influence the next generation coaching and being in a front office and coordinating in this game too. It's not just the NFL and the NBA. So just talks about that. And I think we're slowly getting to it. Obviously, the numbers of it don't look great right now.
It's when you look at the reality of the numbers, and we talk a lot about this, one of the things that there's a couple things that have to happen. I think the good part about it is a lot of that stuff is happening. A lot, you know, we've got to make sure that we're connecting people to the resources. That's one thing, because a lot of folks will be in, you know, be in our messages, be in our DMs, and say, oh man, is there an organization that does yes? And they do X, like provide kids with gloves or something. And they're like, yes, there is, but you got to connect to it. You got to know. So I think we've got to make sure that people are aware of actually what's happening. It's real easy to be like, oh, they're not doing anything, and not knowing what actually is happening. And then I also just think that there's got to be a little bit more of a general understanding and acceptance that we're like, hey, look, there are places where us as a community are accepted in baseball world. And then the one thing you're talking about is like, if there are places that are resistance, we need to create our own paths. And I mean, we can't wait for, you know, other folks to be like, hey, look, we got, you know, we've got a group of boys over there. Come, we can't wait for them to invite us onto the field. We have to kind of, in many ways, and especially in 2024, make our own path, find our own communities and say, hey, let's start playing and then develop these kids. I do want to ask, because you're at the highest level of a development, and that's often what I hear is like the biggest challenge. Like, I hear the biggest challenge is like, all right, we've got kids with talent, but they're not really developed, and then they're going up against kids that have been personal training since they've been six, you know what I mean? How do we, what do kids need to understand about, one, the hard work and the development that goes into baseball?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to football and when it comes to basketball, if you're purely an athlete, you can just survive and thrive for so long in those sports.
You just said a word.
Not in this sport.
You just said a word.
This sport is so skill driven. Like, the acquisition that you need to have hit and swung at a baseball for so long and taken so many ground balls for so long. This is not a sport where you can just come out, I'm going to just pick it up and I'll just out-athlete my way to it. It is incredibly hard to do that. So, yeah, it takes some dedication. It takes patience. It takes, okay, I might not be great at this for a little bit, but eventually I'll get better if I continue to do this versus, oh, I can just go step on a football field and boom, 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 I'm going to score a touchdown.
Yep.
So,
yeah, you're exactly right. You just said a word. This is going to be the last question. Coach Sherman Johnson, I appreciate everything. Let me ask this. The best advice you've ever received. What's the best advice you've ever received? Doesn't have to be baseball. It could be life.
Oof. If you really want something, there's no balance. I mean, you've got to go at it full bore. And if you really want it, all of your habits, how you move, will dictate that you want it. You'll probably end up getting it.
We're going to have to leave it there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Black Baseball Mixtape. Coach Sherman Johnson, until next time, appreciate you, my man. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. What an incredible journey. I want to thank Coach Sherm. I want to thank the Norfolk Tide for their amazing access. We're going to be back in Norfolk this week. Kicks off our opening stretch here in Richmond for the Richmond Flying Squirrels. So we'll be in Richmond all week. If you are at the ballpark in Richmond, holler at me. Last thing I'm going to say is we do have an absolute free group chat. It is room. It is filled every day with baseball fans talking about baseball, baseball content. It gets kind of crazy in the group chat, but it gives you that old feel about the blog era days, right? So it's really exciting. If you want to join our Black Baseball Mixtape group chat on Discord, it is absolutely free. DM Black Baseball Mixtape on Instagram, ask for the code. We will send you the code. It's absolutely free, and you'll be able to talk baseball with us every day. It could be a bit much, but hey, I hope you join it. Hope you enjoy the season. I hope you enjoy this episode. We'll be back next Monday with a brand new episode and with more stuff during the week as well. So keep it locked to the Black Baseball Mixtape. Talk to you until next time.